Sean, we are a little over a week past July 1st, which means it's officially summer. July 4th has passed. It's officially summer. Are you enjoying your summer so far?
I am, Dan. I'm healthy. I finally, like the players, have gotten over the Stanley Cup final, I think, doing a little binge TV and keeping up on the NHL news, of which there is much.
Oh, my goodness. July 1st was crazy, and that's really what we're doing here. This is, you know, it's been a little over a week, like I said. This is sort of a wrap-up podcast of the off-season that is still obviously underway. There's still a lot of different question marks out there, but the bulk of the free agency is done. We've given it time to sort of settle in a little bit here, so that's what we're doing here on this podcast. It was a crazy July 1st. It was a crazy, like, free agent frenzy. And I think where we got to start, Sean, is the Nashville Predators. And by way of that, the Tampa Bay Lightning, too. But Nashville, Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, Brady Shea, they re-signed Saros. Scott Wedgwood's the backup. They re-signed Alexander Carrier. Sean, for the longest time, you've been the biggest promoter of the Nashville Predators on this podcast and in our Super 16. I'm all in.
Well, you're all in, and they're not my Nashville Predators anymore.
They're better.
They're better, and they're different. When have the Nashville Predators ever been star-driven?
I can't think of a time where they were. I mean, P.K. Subban,
they've
Roman
had
Yossi,
stars.
Weber. Yeah, they've had stars, but they've never been star-driven. Maybe they are a little bit star-driven now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a change, and I think it's, you know, Barry Trotz is the new GM understanding, you know, that good isn't good enough, right? This is a mature hockey market now. Good isn't good enough. They don't want to just be there. They don't want to get participation trophies. They want to go back to the Stanley Cup final, and it's a risk. It's a calculated gamble. It didn't cost them a whole lot other than money, not my money, so I don't care. Like, that's the beauty of free agency, right? It doesn't cost you any capital other than your owner's money.
Well, it costs you on the cap. I mean, listen, free agency day, July 1st, most money spent in NHL history on free agency day, which we kind of could have assumed was coming because of the cap going up the way it is. It's the first time the cap's gone up in several years after being a flat cap. And the Nashville Predators made the biggest splash. Steven Stamkos, a four-year contract, $32 million, $8 million a year. Jonathan Marchessault, a five-year contract, $5.5 million per. Brady Shea, 7 years, $7 million per. These are big-ticket guys who all went to Nashville. Now, you and I know what a great market that is. We know what a great hockey market is. We know what a great place it is to go. I would imagine, and we've heard how great of a place it is to live too. And now you're going to see a team, like you said, Sean, that's different. What we're seeing right now is just on paper. But these are winners. That's the thing. And I think Barry Trotz has talked about that, right? Like, when he took over as GM, his idea was wants to bring what he calls serial winners to Nashville. Well, that's Stamkos. Right? I mean, that's Marchessault. Brady Shea has been on only good teams. He's never won the cup, but he's been on only good teams in the National Hockey League. Scott Wedgwood just comes from Dallas. He's a backup goalie, but he comes from Dallas, understands his role. He's bringing winning players into an environment that is established as a winning culture. And now the pressure is on, right? I don't remember a time, Sean, where the pressure was on the Nashville Predators, from external pressure on the Nashville Predators to go win the Stanley Cup or to go be that team that dominates. When you'd make the moves the Predators have made, the pressure's on. But these are players that can handle it. They know the pressure. They understand it. And to them, being a good team in the regular season is not pressure. That's just the expectation.
Well, the scary thing is I still don't know that they're the best team in their division.
Look, I mean, there's good teams in the division. Dallas is still a good team. Colorado, obviously a good team, right? I mean, think about it. Utah got better, way better. Not the best in the division, but they got way better. The Chicago Blackhawks are going to be better than they were. Are they ready? No, but they're not going to be an easy out, right, anymore. Winnipeg's still pretty good. St. Louis is, I think, in the middle of the pack in the division. It's a really good division. You can argue, I'll certainly hear the arguments of Dallas or Colorado being a better team than the Nashville Predators, because we've seen it. We know what the Colorado Avalanche are, right? We know what the Dallas Stars are. We don't know what this Nashville Predators team is.
But it's exciting, right? And it's exciting for the market. And you know, I just, you know, who's probably most excited, and not because he's got a big fat wallet now, is UC Soros. Because in theory, he's not playing 2-1 games anymore. He's got a little leeway. Somebody's going to go score him a goal every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, I would think Andrew Brunette's pretty excited, too, because of the power play he can put together for this team. Remember, the power play was abysmal for the Nashville Predators, right? It was a detriment to them. And it has been for a number of years. This is not just him. It goes back a couple of coaches now that really haven't been able to put a power play together that's been successful and has clicked there. And part of that is they've had a lot of middle six forwards, right? I mean, they've had a lot of middle six guys that they've had to use there. Well, now they can use Forsberg. They can use Stamkos in his spot, Marchessault, Roman Josi. Brady Shea could be on the second unit. Ryan O'Reilly. There's star power that's going to be on that power play, and that's going to make a difference. That's a goal a game, maybe. For that could be the difference between a half a goal and a goal a game, which makes UC Soros' job a heck of a lot easier.
And the one thing we haven't even talked about, the scariest thing if you're an opponent of the Nashville Predators, is you're getting a pissed off Steven Stamkos. You're getting a pissed off Jonathan Marchessault. I don't know if Bob Bender, our producer, allows pissed off. Maybe he'll take this out when it's over. But they are pissed, both of them. And it's going to be a revenge tour. It's the Tom Brady revenge tour.
Possibly. That would be pretty good for the Nashville Predators if it ended up that way, right? Stamkos has every right to be pissed, Sean. They were done wrong. Marchessault in particular. You're telling me that the Vegas Golden Knights couldn't sign, didn't believe that Jonathan Marchessault is still a $5.5 million player, and they wouldn't be given, they wouldn't, maybe they wanted him at 3 years, he got five, I mean, settle at four. I don't know. I think that was done wrong. They went, the Vegas Golden Knights continue to do it. They go out and they get what they think is the next best thing. Last year it was Thomas Hertl, right? Thomas Hertl is there, and now Jonathan Marchessault is not. Now, are the Vegas Golden Knights better with Thomas Hertl and not having Jonathan Marchessault? Maybe they are. I don't know, but they just keep going out and doing that. But we don't know at all. Marchessault is a huge part of that culture. He is what they are. He is the Vegas Golden Knights, right? Then you look at the Stamkos situation. And I put this question out on Twitter, and I still don't know the answer. Are the Tampa Bay Lightning better with Jake Guentzel and Ryan McDonagh with the understanding of the window to win is well open for the Lightning, but it won't stay open for that long? It's still open. Are they better this coming season and next with Jake Guentzel and Ryan McDonagh or with Steven Stamkos and Mikhail Sergachev? We don't know the answer because we haven't seen Guentzel play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But if I asked the question, if I had to come up with an answer today, I would say they'd be better with Stamkos and Sergachev.
I agree 100%, mainly because you've put a dagger through the heart of that team. Right? It's not even Stamkos leaving. People leave. He's part of that core, and they're left behind, and they're left to pick up the pieces, and I don't think they understand why. They wanted it.
Exactly.
Stamkos wanted it. Everybody wanted it. Breezeball couldn't make it happen. He said he wanted it. If everybody wanted it, they would still be together. And I think if you're Victor Hedman, you're kind of sitting there and you're saying, what just happened? And how do I deal with it? And there's going to be a grieving process. And I wouldn't want to be Jake Guentzel, not because he's not good and not because he can't be as good as Steven Stamkos, but because he's not Steven Stamkos. And that's going to be a huge hurdle for however long it takes to go through the seven stages of grief.
He's always going to be compared to Stamkos, right? So if Jake Guentzel goes out and scores 40 goals and puts up 80 points and the power play is still good, then the Lightning are fine, okay? And he could very well do that because that's the comparison. That's what Stamkos did last year, right? But if he doesn't, and the Lightning don't go anywhere, he's going to have, that's what is going to be carrying following Jake Guentzel. That's going to be following Guentzel. It's not his fault, but that's the nature of it. That's the way it goes. But still, like, let's go back to the question I asked, right? Stamkos, you know exactly what you have, exactly where he fits, and everything he can do on and off the ice. I think the world of Jake Gensel as a player. We don't know where he fits with the Tampa Bay Lightning. We don't know where he fits on the power play for the Lightning. It's got to change. We know that. We don't know where he fits in the room. I'm sure it's fine. He's not Listen, Gensel is a professional. He is liked wherever he goes. This is not on Gensel, okay? But you're taking out the known commodity, and you know it works, for the unknown. Why? Why?
Well, let me say two things. One, if Jake Gensel scores 80 points, it's not the 80 points.
Not enough.
It's not the 80 points that Steven Stamkos would score and what he would bring with it. But the reason why is because you're gambling, right? You don't know where Steven Stamkos' cliff is. What True. If we're sitting here and saying, oh, Jake Gensel, what if he doesn't score 80 points? What if Steven Stamkos doesn't score 60? Who's on the hot seat then?
No, you're right. You're 100% right. There's an age difference. There's a games played difference. There's a mileage factor here that we do have to consider. And that is honestly what Julien Brisebois is considering. I mean, that's the nature of the move, right? Did you understand the Sergachev move?
Only in cap dynamics.
You went out to get Ryan McDonagh. You bring him back, right? By the way, that freed up the ability for the Nashville Predators to partially do what they did by freeing up the Ryan McDonagh contract, right? $6.75 million over the next 2 years is what we're talking about. So you go out and get McDonagh, and then you trade Sergachev. So you're essentially replacing Sergachev, who's 26 years old, way less miles on him, way less, you know, block shots and, you know, bruises and all this stuff on him, for Ryan McDonagh, who's got a lot of miles on him, a lot of block shots on him. And we're talking about the difference of $1.75 million for a couple of years. You can make up that difference somewhere. I would prefer to... I think the world of Ryan McDonagh as a player. Give me Mikhail Sergachev every day.
Again, like I just look at it from the player point of view. Here's a guy played with a broken leg for you.
Yeah. McDonagh would do that too, though.
For his teammates. No, I'm not saying somebody else wouldn't do it. I'm saying he chose to do it. He said, I can play. Let me play. It's early. I shouldn't be playing. It's playoffs. Let me play. It's important to me. These people are important to me. And then he's out the door. Look, Dan, in a way, I'm glad I get to sit here and talk into a microphone and have no accountability, because I think it would be extraordinarily hard to be a general manager and to make these type of decisions that impact multiple people, not just a player, his teammates, his support system, all of it. Like, they're brutally hard decisions, and you need to do what you think is best for your organization. And Brisebois has done that throughout. And Tampa's been the cream of the crop in the East. You know, I would say Tampa and Boston are the model franchises. And they've been torn apart in different ways. But I can't question anything he's done, because almost all of it's turned to gold.
Listen, you're right. I asked the question why. I'm trying to figure out the answer. He has a plan, Brisebois, as does Kelly McCrimmon, when we talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. And how can you argue with it, right? I mean, how do you argue with it? You're talking about teams that have recently won the Stanley Cup. Tampa twice, been there three times. The Vegas just won it last season, two seasons ago if you want, right? So you can't argue with it, but we can certainly say it's different, and we can question the concepts around it. We'll see the result. They have plans. They know what they're doing, and we have no accountability as we talk into a microphone. You're right. All right, listen. We did a Super 16. I have the Edmonton Oilers number one, and the Florida Panthers I have at number two. You have it reversed. Florida one, Edmonton two. Can't argue with you. One team won the Stanley Cup. The other one was a goal away in Game 7, right? I have it Edmonton at one because of what they gained. Okay. That's why I put it at one. You're talking about Victor Arvidsson. He's a middle six guy, can score goals. Jeff Skinner at $3 million a year for 1 year looks a heck of a lot better than Jeff Skinner at $8-plus million a year in Buffalo. Adam Henrique, they brought back. Janmark, they brought back. Perry, Brown, they signed Josh Brown. I like what the Oilers have done here to continue it on. And now they have belief system. They have the blueprint for how they need to play. Look at their penalty kill, how good it was in the playoffs. And you know, so that's why I have them at one. And the reason I have the Panthers, who won the Stanley Cup, and were the better team, and deserve to win the Stanley Cup, they didn't win it by a fluke, is who they lost. They lost Montour. They lost Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Those are two big pieces from their defense. Tarasenko and Lomberg and Stenlund. These guys are gone. So big pieces from a team. I mean, we talk about Stenlund and Lomberg and guys like Steven Lawrence and Kyle Okposo. That's an important fourth line guys for them. They were part of why they won. That's why I had them at number two. It's who they lost. Yes, they brought back Reinhardt. They brought back Kulikov. And they've replaced some of these guys. They have, right, with depth guys. But we don't know how those depth guys fit in. So that's the reason I went Edmonton 1, Florida 2.
And I understand it. I just always give the benefit of the doubt to the cup champion. And they have Barkov. Like, you talk about all the changes Edmonton made around the mushy middle, like you like to call it in the standings. Yeah. Like, their mushy middle. They changed a bunch of things around. And I'm really excited to see, you know, what Skinner does and what Savoy does, right? They traded for Savoy from Buffalo as well, former first-round pick. People get better when they're around Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? So I think they could still be line-matched. I think Barkov is still going to own McDavid.
Own?
And that's the difference.
About own. I don't know about own. I'm not so sure about that.
Who owned who in Game 7?
In Game owned. 7, I'm going to give it to Barkov.
Owned.
Yes. Owned him in Game 7. Who owned who
in Games 1 through 3?
Well, McDavid started to break out a little bit, but who owned who in Games 4,
he had,
5,
he
and
had 6? He had three secondary assists. McDavid had nothing in Game 6. Nothing. He had two games. He scored 4 points in each game.
He owned them in those games.
All right, so it's 5-2.
Probably like 4-2-1.
Okay, sure.
I'm just being contrarian for the simple fact of being contrarian. I love Barkov. He's a great player. But yeah, you're right. People get better around McDavid. And listen, Florida is not a team that's going to tumble here. Okay, just because of the players that I mentioned that they lost. I mean, this is still a very good team. I just look at it and I say, I think the Oilers got better on paper for what they did. And there was no way that the Panthers were going to get better on paper because they were bound to lose some of the guys that they had. It's just the nature of the business, and that's kind of how it goes. But, you know, listen, I mean, Warren Fogle played a big role, and he's gone for Edmonton. Ryan McLeod, he's gone. So there's players, there's just more added, I think, to the Oilers. And then you have Adam Henrique, right, who I mentioned, two-year contract, $3 million. He liked it there. He's staying there. It's a good place to be. It's where you want to be right now if you're a hockey player is playing alongside McDavid and Draisaitl. However, there is still a question about out there. Leon Draisaitl is going to need a new contract. He has 1 year left on his deal. What that next contract looks like, I have no idea. But I know McDavid's going to top it in 2 years, right? The Oilers don't have a general manager. They need one. Jeff Jackson is the acting general manager. What is Leon Draisaitl's future? Could Leon Draisaitl be traded if they can't come to terms on a new deal before the start of the season? He's still got 1 year left, so there's no pressure there, right? But there are pressure. You know about the pressure points that come along the way, right? The summer on a going into his last year, it's a pressure point. Once you hit training camp, a lot of guys say, I don't want to deal with this, right? Maybe the team doesn't want to deal with it too. He's one of those guys. I think it's impossible to think that Leon Draisaitl would be traded, but Leon Draisaitl might say to himself, you know what? I don't know if I want to sign here. I want to go be the man. Right now, I'm behind the guy.
That guy's his best friend.
I know.
Yeah, and his best friend's going to say, I want that guy. Connor McDavid gets what he wants.
Get that guy.
What he wants.
Take care of that guy.
Yeah. And look, there's somebody else who did that throughout his whole career in Sidney Crosby.
Yep.
But what he did was he went to management and he said, take care of that guy. Take it from me. I'll play for a little less. I want to win. $8.7 million is what he played for in the prime of his career.
You're right. So what's it come down to? What's the deal, right? I mean, that we don't know the answer to that question. I'm not asking you to give me an answer to that question, but what's the deal that gets Leon Draisaitl signed long-term for another 8 years, make it nine because he's got 1 year left, that satisfies Leon Draisaitl and the player that he is, satisfies the Oilers' ability to keep a team around him and McDavid, and then what's the deal a year from now for number 97? Because it's going to have to probably be a better deal than Leon's deal, right? So these are big questions that the Oilers have. Does it take away, as long as they don't trade Draisaitl, doesn't take away what they're capable of doing? You know, they're a Stanley Cup contender. We've seen it. We know it, right? But those are the big questions. And to be honest with you, there's also a huge question. I'm going to change teams on you here for a second. Mitch Marner and the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? That's another one. What's going to happen there? I'll assume that Sidney Crosby is going to sign with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it's a different situation. But Marner and Draisaitl are two huge names that are involved in this offseason, and we're waiting for what's going to happen next.
You know who's a huge name? Sam Reinhart.
I see the comparison. I know exactly what you're trying to say. Maybe that's more of a comparison for Reinhart. And Marner, I don't know that you can make that to Draisaitl. I think it's a stretch for that. Leon Draisaitl's a Hart Trophy winner. He's an Art Ross Trophy winner. He's had a longer history of being a dominant player than Sam Reinhart has. Sam Reinhart's he just broke out. If Sam Reinhart never scores 50 goals again, it's still a good contract as long as he's in. Approaching that 40-goal mark, right, where he signed his contract, an 8-year contract. I think it's 8.6 or 8.625. It's a great deal for the Florida Panthers, but it's a little bit of a stretch to go Draisaitl and that comparison. But I see what you're saying. He went into the last year of his deal.
The comparison is that Florida let him go into the last year of his deal. He decided to go into the last year of his deal. And I would argue that it worked out for everybody. And before we get on to Mitch Marner, literally the only reason, Dan, that I thought about not putting the Florida Panthers number one is because of the literal hangover they're going to have. There is not a figurative hangover for being a Stanley Cup champion for the Florida Panthers. There's going to be a literal hangover.
They're having a good time. As they should. At least the Stanley Cup is not floating out into the middle of the ocean. They were able to lifeguard that sucker back in. Marner, Leafs. I almost hesitate to say this, and this is not about Marner, because we'll see about that. I like what the Toronto Maple Leafs have done, but I feel like every time I want to say I like what the Leafs look like, I like what they've done, and it doesn't work out, right?
Their goaltending?
I don't like their goaltending from the experience perspective and what we see on paper. I mean, every goalie at some point has to prove it. So that's what Joe Wall and Anthony Stolarz have to do. But no, absolutely not. But I how could you say you like their goaltending compared to other goaltending situations around the Eastern Conference? But I like their defense a heck of a lot better.
What's the most important thing?
It's goaltending. Listen, and that's why I hesitated to say I like what the Toronto Maple Leafs have done, okay? Because it's just like, you have to have that caveat and like, well, what's their goaltending going to look like? And it's also, what are their top-end forwards going to be, right? I mean, we know they're going to be good in the regular season. That's not enough, right? It's we say it every year, it's time. And every year, time passes them by, okay? But I like the moves that the Maple Leafs have made in addressing an area that they needed to address. I like getting Chris Tanev. I don't care that it's a six-year contract. It's the first 3 years of that contract that matter. Because without the, if they don't, they're not successful in the first 3 years of that contract, everybody associated with the Toronto Maple Leafs right now will not be there for the last 3 years of that contract. It'll be somebody else's problem. Brad Treliving signed him to a six-year deal. The Leafs signed him to a six-year deal to keep the cap figure down at $4.5 million, and they're looking at the first 3 years. I like the Oliver Ekman-Larsson signing, $3.5 million. I don't like 4 years, 2 years, maybe three, right? That's what the window is that you're looking at here with Austin Matthews signed for what? 3 more years, right? So I like what they've done. Hakanpaa's a nice little signing too on the back end. Big physical guy. Tanev, big and physical. Ekman-Larsson moves the puck. Their defense needed an overhaul, and it got one. They're better in that way. Maybe that makes the goaltending better. I still don't love the goaltending. How could you love the goaltending?
I don't. And I don't necessarily love their defense. Chris Tanev is the best. I love everything about him. I love the way he plays hockey. I love everything. He's not a regular season player, right? He's a guy you get for the playoffs. I think the regular season is really hard for him to play because it wears on him the way he plays. But I think he's going to be great for that room. I think he's going to loosen things up. Let me ask you this. If Oliver Ekman-Larsson plays exactly the same way he did in Florida, is he going to survive in Toronto?
That's a really good question. He didn't in Vancouver, but he didn't play the way he played in Florida in Vancouver. He was not that player.
But was that maybe why?
Maybe. I don't know. I hope the expectations on Oliver Ekman-Larsson remain what they should be. He is, but it's Toronto. It's different. I understand that. But if he plays the way he did in Florida, it will help the Toronto Maple Leafs more than it will hurt the Toronto Maple Leafs. He just has to have the head on his shoulder to be able to play that way, to be able to handle it. Obviously, it didn't work in Vancouver. It has in Arizona, and it has in Florida, two markets where you don't have near the stress of the media market that you have in the Canadian media markets. We know that. But again, how could you? It's a move you have to like if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, and if you're a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's a guy who comes in. He just won the Stanley Cup. He played a role in that, but not a huge role. He's not coming in to be your number one defenseman. He's not coming in to be your top power play defenseman. He's coming in to play more than likely a bottom six, a third pair role, and maybe he gets on your second power play. Let's leave the expectations are where they should be.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll do that, Dan. I'm sorry. My mistake.
Now, let me ask you this question. Are the Toronto Maple Leafs better today than they were when they got into the playoffs this past season?
They better than the Boston Bruins?
They are not. I love what the Boston Bruins did.
Are they better than the Florida Panthers?
No.
Are they better? Are they better than the New Jersey Devils? Are they better than the New York Rangers?
No. No.
So what are they? They're a second round out.
Maybe.
Good for you, Toronto.
Maybe. They very well could be. I think they're better than they were. That doesn't mean that they pushed themselves over the edge. The guys are going to have to push themselves over the edge. Matthews is going to have to do it. Nylander's going to have to do it. Marner,
Matthews has done everything he can do. What more do you want that cat to do?
I want him to perform the way he does in the regular season in the playoffs.
Should he score 100 goals?
No, but he should score more than he did in the playoffs. They need to be playoff players. You brought up Boston. Let's go there. Because I absolutely love what the Boston Bruins did. You're bringing in, this is a winning culture, we know that. And they're bringing in guys that fit to the T, the way the Bruins want to play. A two-way center, Patrice Bergeron light, Elias Lindholm, right? He's not Bergeron. Nobody is. Maybe nobody ever will be again, okay? That type of player. But he plays the style of Bergeron. That fits Boston. Nikita Zadorov, big guy, fun guy to be around, right? Gregarious personality, but big, can move a puck, can play physical, is going to buy in, is going to be an all-in player for you. It's exactly what a Boston Bruin is supposed to be. I love these two moves for the Bruins. They filled holes that they had all last season, and they were still a pretty good team last season. And now they can slot guys probably where they're supposed to be, as opposed to playing guys ahead of where they're supposed to be, they were already a good team. They're a much better team with Lindholm and Zadorov on paper than it's on paper. We have to see how it plays out, but they're a much better team.
Look, they probably lost one of the best goalies in the league, and I don't even think it affects them.
Because they have one of the best goalies in the league still.
Yeah. And that situation had to come to a head at some point. And look, they get Korpisalo back, and people are up in arms in Boston. Like, Korpisalo on 20 games, I'll take him. He's not playing with the Ottawa Senators. No offense to that. Well, I guess offense to the Ottawa Senators. He's not playing in front of their defense.
Or Columbus.
He's playing in front of the Boston Bruins system and defense. It's slightly different.
He's also not a number one. He doesn't have to be that guy. He's got to be the guy that gets along with Swayman. He's got to, I mean, if he can have the relationship with Swayman that Ullmark had and play 25 to 30 games and you give the Boston Bruins 14, 15 wins, solid goaltending, well, he's done his job because you got to count on Jeremy Swayman to give you 35 wins, right? The Bruins, to me, took a big jump. They take a big step. They were a little smoke and mirrors last year. System was good. Defense was solid. Goaltending was great. But you wondered about their offense all the way through. You wondered about things like that. And now Lindholm brings that two-way factor that they just were missing in a huge way. They were never able to replace when Bergeron retired. So now they get it. They're a better team. They're right there with Florida. I think Toronto is still probably third in that division. In Tampa, we don't know. Right, I mean, Tampa, we don't know. But again, Sean, it leaves the same four teams at the bottom of that division. When are the Ottawa Senators going to take a step? When are the Buffalo Sabres going to take a step? When are the Detroit Red Wings? The Montreal Canadiens are still in a slow rebuild. I'll give them that. But, I mean, come on. At some point, Ottawa's got to jump into the picture, right? At some point, Buffalo's got to jump into the picture. Detroit's got to jump into the picture. Tampa's the team you look at right now and say, hey, we can maybe knock them out. And the Tampa Bay Lightning are still really good. They still have Kucherov and Point and Vasilevsky and Hedman and now Gensel, right? I mean, they're still really good. At some point, one of these teams at the bottom four of the Atlantic Division is going to step up and like at least be representative for a playoff berth.
The Tampa Bay Lightning also have John Cooper. Let's not forget that. That's a secret weapon. And out of all those teams, everybody in Buffalo should probably do a dance because I ain't picking them.
Not anymore.
I've thrown in the towel. Then no more. If they make it, good for them. But I'm not on that bandwagon. If I got to pick one, and I did in the Super 16, I had Detroit.
I'm doing a mailbag. It's going to run Wednesday. This is Tuesday when we're recording this. And I got a question about the Buffalo Sabres. You know, and the question was this. In your opinion, what kind of strides has Buffalo made for its roster during the offseason? Has it been an upgrade or not? And, like, I want Buffalo to be a winning market. I so want it. It's been so long. I think it's a great hockey market. They've added depth. So I guess if you look at their depth being better, Zucker, Lafferty, Nicholas Aube-Kubel, Ryan McLeod, the guy Beck Malmsten in trades got him too. But, I mean, it's got to be Dahlin. It's got to be Power. It's got to be Byram. It's got to be Tuck Cousins, you know, Thompson, these type of players. And they have shown absolutely nothing, right? So why would what I believe that they're going to show something this year? Why would I pick them to be a top 16 team? Why would I pick them to be a playoff team? I've made that mistake. I'm not making it again.
Who are those guys? Were any of them a home run?
No. No. Absolutely not.
Who needed to hit a home run this summer?
Oh, they did. Big time. Sabres did. And they did not. They hit a bunch of bunt singles and, you know, infield hits and maybe one lands in the outfield at some point.
Yeah, I don't love their summer. There's a lot of it left. Look, I just talked to Eric Tulsky the other day, the Carolina Hurricanes, their new GM, and he was like, they got decimated, right? On the day one of free agency, Gensel's out the door, Shea's out the door, Pesci's out the door, and he's like, it's day one. day one doesn't make free agency. We have a lot of time to rebuild here. And look, I love Carolina's system, and I actually wrote the blurb for Carolina in our Super 16. I think they were down around 11. They have a way about them. They're like Boston, right? You know, when Bergeron and Krejci left Boston and Chara and all that, it was all doom and gloom, and somehow the system made up for it. And I think, you know, with the Rod Brind'Amour system, you know, we just talked about John Cooper. I think Ron Brind'Amour is in that same place. I think his ability to lead men will get them past this, but they need to do something. The bleeding is extensive.
Day one of free agency, crushed the Carolina Hurricanes. It was a crushing blow that they took. And I understand what Eric Tulsky, their new GM, is trying to do. He's trying to manage the situation and say this is not the end-all be-all. And he's right. More mistakes are made on day one of free agency than home runs are hit. Okay? There's more swings and misses than home runs hit if we keep the baseball analogies going. So I understand that. But they lost their second pair defense, a really good pair, in Brett Pesce and Brady Shea. They lost the guy that they acquired at the deadline that they were hoping to keep for a long time in Jake Gensel. They lost Nason. They lost guys that are key parts of this team. And it's a team that continues to underachieve in the playoffs. They are serial underachievers in the Stanley Cup playoffs. At some point, that's got to change one way or the other. And if you ask me, Sean, I agree with you. I think they're still a playoff team. I think they're still a good team. But they're no closer to winning a Stanley Cup. And day one of free agency put them much, I think, further away. So I get what Tulsky's trying to do, but they're further away than they were when they were in the Stanley Cup playoffs just a few short months ago.
And they have a couple of restricted free agents they have to deal with. And Look, losing Gensel was huge on the ice, but off the ice it was huge too, because Carolina finally, again with the baseball analogy, they finally swung for the fences. They went and got the King's ransom at the trade deadline, and they paid a King's ransom to get him. They never did that. It didn't work out, and the solace was, well, we get the chance to re-sign him, and they couldn't. So it sets them back even further. Not only did they lose the player and they have to replace him, they have to replace all the assets that went out the door. And it was so counterintuitive to what Carolina does that, you know, the next time they have that opportunity, it's going to be that much harder to pull the trigger.
It is.
It was a franchise-defining day.
And it did. It was a failure.
No, I mean, July 1st was, with all the ramifications, this is going to define the Carolina Hurricanes for the next 5 years.
I agree. Yes. I think the Gensel trade ends up as a failure, and July 1st was a crushing blow for them. So that's Carolina. What about the Rangers, the team that beat Carolina? They didn't do much, right? And it's like, you wonder, like, what's coming? Is anything coming, right? For a while there, I was like, all right, they cleared a little cap space. They're going to, you know, waving Barclay Goodrow, getting San Jose to take on his full contract. They may trade Kako. That hasn't happened yet. They need a winger to play with Zibanejad and Kreider if they're going to keep him there. They signed Sam Carrick. Fine. 3-year deal. $1 million per. He's your fourth line center. He's your Barclay Goodrow replacement at a much more palatable cap hit than Barclay Goodrow's cap hit. So they make that decision. They get Riley Smith. I mean, Riley Smith on his best day with the Vegas Golden Knights was a good player, but he was still a role player, right? And that's what he's going to have to be with the Rangers, but he's going to have to be a good player, I think, with the Rangers, because at this point, he's a top six. He's a first-line right wing.
Well, he's certainly surrounded with good players.
He is, and so. I think they're still a good team. I don't know if they're a President's Trophy winning team, but they didn't lose much, right? They didn't lose much. The question is can they be better than they were? Because they weren't good enough.
All I know, Dan.
Here comes Matt Rempe.
You better fear the Rempire.
Did you see that tweet from George LaRocque?
I sent it to you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was my nightmare fuel last night. I saw it at like 11:30. George LaRocque putting the NHL on notice because he's training Matt Rempe at this silent arena, which I love. The silent arena. The
silent arena is great in Edmonton, yeah.
In Edmonton. I want to go to the silent arena. Not to see Matt Rempe train, but just to go to the silent arena. I think that would be a really cool place. But the NHL has been put on notice. George Laroque is training Matt Rempe. I think all your lineup questions have been answered. He'll plug any hole.
All right, last question for you. We're done with the Rangers. Last question for you before we close it out. The Vancouver Canucks. Jake DeBrusque. What do you think? 7-year deal, $5.5 million per. That seems like a lot for Jake DeBrusque, doesn't it? Seems like an overpay.
It does. It does, and you know, what he does there, I'm curious to see. You know, maybe he's finally happy. And happy players are good players for the most part. It's not going to be an easy road. He's a big ticket guy in a big market that's hungry for success.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be given much leeway to find his game. It better be quick. I don't love it. And I don't know that it's what they needed.
Yeah. I don't love it either. If he brings you some offense and scores some goals, it's still, he's not going to be a player that lives up to a 7-year contract in my mind, because Pettersson, Miller, Besser right now, if he continues to play there, Quinn Hughes, those are your top guys for Peronic, obviously Demko. And DeBrusque is being, $5.5 million is not being paid as a top guy, but it's not being paid as a middle guy either. He's sort of somewhere between the middle and top, and it's a long deal, and he's going to have to find it quick or he's going to hear about it. But what I do like is what the Canucks did in terms of players that they brought in, where they're coming from. DeBrusque comes from Boston, right? And so does Derek Forbort. Vincent Desharnais comes from Edmonton. You're bringing in players who come from winning environments, and that's what you're trying to establish, a consistent winning environment. Edmonton, for years, have been trying to establish that, maybe is there now, right? Boston, we know, is there. And so I think that does help, that they come in from a winning environment to a team that learned how to win and how hard it is to win at the same time last year.
Yeah, look, I think DeBrusque, is a talk-it player. So I think that helps. I think there's going to be a belief in him from the beginning, and not just because of the money that's been laid out, but just a philosophical belief in how the game is played. I think that helps. And then you mentioned all their stars, and as you were mentioning them all, I was like, yeah, they're all really good.
Yeah.
There's not an ounce of angst or malice amongst any of them.
I think JT Miller has some.
Okay. So one of them.
Well, Dakota Joshua does.
Well, but I'm not talking about Dakota Joshua. I'm talking about all the stars that you named. And I'm like, well, if I put characteristics, Pettersson, I'd put anger, angst, and malice, 13, 14, 15. Quinn Hughes, the same thing. Like, here's a guy in the West, who, as our good friend Pierre LeBrun has said for years, wears the big boy pants and plays big boy hockey.
Yeah, but he doesn't have that malice to him. Doesn't have that angst like you're talking about.
He has more than all those other guys combined, except for maybe JT Miller.
Yeah, I think except for JT Miller. He doesn't have the size to put it all there out there. So anyway, I like where the players are coming from for Vancouver, the guys they got. They're a good team. I mean, they finished first in the Pacific Division. They reached the second round of the playoffs. They're a good team, and they should. The goal is to get better, and they'll get Demko back. They'll have their goaltending. Hopefully he's healthy. I think it's hard to argue with the players that they got. I think you can argue with the contract that DeBrusque got. Last thing before we get out of here, it absolutely has to get mentioned. It's history, and we probably should have opened with it, but at least we're gonna end with it. Jessica Campbell getting the job as an assistant coach with the Seattle Kraken staff, Dan Bylsma's staff in Seattle. First female assistant coach, first female on the bench in the National Hockey League in history. There will be more to come. She is groundbreaking. She obviously worked with Bylsma for the last couple of seasons in Coachella Valley. He knows her. It only, I mean, listen, it makes perfect sense. You bring what, you know, you bring along whoever it is, you bring them along if they help you and if you think they're good. He thinks she's good and she's going to get that chance, and she's a trailblazer as well.
I did that press conference last week, you know, and I thought the most telling thing she said is, yeah, I'm the first one. I don't want to be the only one. I don't think she's going to be. You look at her track record, like people are like, oh, what does she do to deserve this? There's so many more deserving people. And that's just crap, right? Like, she was so in demand during COVID to work with NHL players as a skills coach, as a skating coach. Like, she understands the game of hockey. She's played it at the highest level that women are allowed to play it. You know, she's coached in Europe. She's coached here now. You know, she's taken the long route and paid her dues. And, you know, congratulations to Dan Bylsma, you know, for having the faith and to a degree the chutzpah, right? Because it is a big move. But if you ever thought about which team would do it, and you were a gambling person, Seattle would have to be near the top. Like, you look at that organization and you look at what Ron Francis has done and the people that he's brought in, scouts, analytics, you know, he's brought in the broadcast and he's brought in the best people, regardless of background, regardless of gender, regardless of everything. He's built a very diverse and a very fluid organization, much like it was in Carolina when he was there. So if I had to bet on an organization to do it, it would have been Seattle, but that takes nothing away from what Jessica Campbell's accomplished. And, you know, shout out to you, because the other assistant coach is Bob Woods.
That's right. That's right.
Who did Coach's Corner for us. And I believe this is 7 years in a row that you've had somebody do Coach's Corner, sometimes two people in the same year who have gotten jobs after you've showcased their brilliance on our website.
Well, listen, I mean, if you count it, Dean Evason lost his job, did Coach's Room with us, and then got a job with Hockey Canada at the World Championships. And I'm going to assume Dean Evason, I hope he does, get a job soon in the National Hockey League as well. And Bob Woods took over for him, and now he gets a job with the Seattle Kraken. I like to think I play a small role in this, Sean.
You play a huge role in this, and I just want every coach out there who's listening to know, get your resumes in for the coach's room. Send money, and I'll put you with Dan.
It's pretty much a lock that you're going to get a job if you work with me. Just pointing out there, there's no reason to be humble about this. My record speaks for itself.
Exactly. You are like the reverse of the Sports Illustrated jinx.
That's right. I'm good at this. The coaches are pretty smart, too. So let's be honest here. They do the bulk of the work anyway. So listen, this was fun. The offseason continues on. There's questions out there. I addressed some of them in my mailbag. It runs Wednesday. We talked about some of them here. Marner, Draisaitl, two of the big ones, right? When Sidney Crosby going to sign a contract extension? He's got 1 year left on his deal. So there's still some stuff out there, but it's quieting down now. And Sean, we can enjoy our summers now.
We're going to try.
We thank everybody for listening all season long. We try to have some fun here, try to give some information. Hope the listeners out there enjoy it. And everybody enjoy the off season, and soon enough, enjoy the hockey.